Hi, and welcome to the Doc Buddy Journal podcast. I'm your host, Eric Sunset. This episode is being recorded on Thursday, February 16th, 2023. And on this one, we've got a really special guest who is Dr. Maggie Jeffries. Dr. Jeffries is based out of Houston, Texas. She is the owner of Avanti Anesthesia, and she is also the vice president on the board of directors for the Texas Ambulatory Surgery Center Society, which you may better know as TASCS, among actually many other responsibilities for Dr. Jeffries. And she joined us to talk specifically about the upcoming annual conference and Capital Day that TASCS is hosting from March 6th through 8th. This is happening in Austin, Texas. And you can visit texasascsociety.org for more information about attending the event. And you will, of course, be able to see Doc Buddy there at TASCS. Be sure to visit our booth during the annual conference, which will be in the exhibit hall at TASCS, to see how our OpNote solution enables instant generation and approval of operative reports at the point of care, all from the surgeon's smartphone. So we'd love to show that to you. And as always, be sure that you're subscribed to the Doc Buddy Journal on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And now, let's get into the show. All right. Well, Dr. Maggie Jeffries, thank you for carving a little bit of your week out to spend with us here on the Doc Buddy Journal. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, it's our pleasure. We know you are a super busy person. I'll read off your list of responsibilities here. You're the owner of Avanti Anesthesia in Houston, Texas. You're a consultant with Imprimis Pharmaceuticals, president of the Ophthalmic Anesthesia Society. You're on the Texas Ambulatory Surgery Center Society Board of Directors, probably better known as TASCS. So thank you for giving us any of your time at all. You are quite the busy person.
It's my pleasure. It does keep me busy.
And the upcoming TASCS event this year in Austin is one of the things we're really excited to talk to you about. So you're vice president of the TASCS Board of Directors. For those that may not be familiar, can you just speak a little bit to what TASCS does for ASCs or ambulatory surgery centers?
Sure. I mean, sum total, our role really is to advocate for the industry, the ASC industry, and promote the industry as a whole. It's actually really amazing how many people you come across who don't know what an ASC is or the value we bring from patients, other physicians even, and certainly some of the payers themselves. And so our real goal, and we take it really seriously, is to provide a united voice for our industry in Texas. And we do that through our regulatory agencies, rulemaking processes, legislation, and we also provide networking and education throughout the year to the members of our society. And we try to make it cost effective for our centers as well. For example, they get three free people to attend our yearly conference to continue to try to promote that relationship with our members.
And that's coming right up. We're just a couple of weeks away. This year's TASCS annual conference is March 6th through 8th. Last year it was in Houston, your hometown. And it's kind of fun. I get to look back and say, oh, you know, we met at Margaritaville. Last time we chatted, we were having a drink at Margaritaville. So anyway, it's moving venues. This year it's in Austin, so not too far away from Houston. And I know one of the drivers there was to take advantage of the Capitol being right there. TASCS is hosting a Capitol Day. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the Texas legislature meets every other year. So every other year, our meeting is always held in Austin in conjunction with a Capitol Day. And the goal of that is to go to the Capitol and talk about ASCs, the value they provide. And it's not just the board members that are encouraged to attend that, but everybody who's at the conference. And we actually have a pre-Capitol Day meeting where we kind of talk to people about how you talk to your legislators, what are the issues and the legislative agenda that applies to us that we can talk about? And then you get assigned to go speak with a legislator in a small group one-on-one. And it's actually a really beneficial experience to be connected with how laws are made in Texas and to make an impact to make sure that our legislators know what affects us in the services that we provide.
Yeah, and getting to have these conversations with the Texas legislature, what are some of the things that are front burner for TASCS this year?
So This year, well, it's really hard to say. All of the legislative content has just recently been posted. I was talking about to you previously about how much there is to kind of dig through. One of the big ones out there is smoke evacuators in OR in operating rooms. That'll be a big bill that'll be discussed about, you know, is the smoke dangerous? And if so, how do we evacuate that from the surgical field to keep our staff members safe? So that's one I know for sure that we'll be making a comment on. But really, we all have a lot of paperwork to dig through before we get to that meeting to really kind of drill down on some of the other issues. But in general, you know, we're always looking at some of our legislative burdens as well, like rules as they apply to the THCIC, the Pharmacy Board, Health and Human Services, and the Texas Workforce Commission, and agencies like that that are sub-government agencies that we interact with a lot. So if there's ever any content that relates to those, we'll usually drill down on those issues as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, you can see it right here, plain as day, that healthcare touches so many different parts of the government and interacts with patients as consumers, as patients as healthcare consumers. You know, as the world turns, so to speak. So looking back over either previous legislative sessions or previous TASCs annual conferences, what are some of the bigger wins that TASCs has had, or what are some notable interactions with the legislature? Like anything come to mind there?
Yeah, I'd say last year at our meeting, we developed for the first time a relationship with the Texas Workforce Commission and kind of partnered up with them. They even published an article in their newsletter educating what an ASC is and how we bring value to Texans and the Texas healthcare industry as a whole. So that relationship is really new and was started last year at our annual meeting. And I'm really excited about where that will go in the future. It's just an example of how we kind of reach out to societies with common goals. And at the end of the day, our real goal is to make sure that people understand that we play a major role in healthcare in our state. And we provide cost-effective and efficient care to our constituents. And so it's really important that that message gets spread.
Oh, absolutely. And then the climate around cost-effective and efficient care, you know, obviously with bills like the No Surprises Act being passed into law and just the continuing march towards the consumerization of healthcare, the availability of care at ASCs is huge. And I'm going to key in on something you mentioned a little bit earlier. It's not a surprise to me, you know, when speaking to family and friends, they say an ASC, what's that? I don't know what that is. But that there's a drive to educate even the physician population is kind of interesting. I mean, it's cool because ASCs are primed for growth and they do make care more affordable and more accessible. But it's interesting if physicians aren't totally aware of this place of service.
Yeah, it's really important that everyone really kind of understand, even the people that don't know what we really are have, statistically speaking, actually been in an ASC, whether they've had a small minor procedure, maybe their colonoscopy, maybe they've taken a family member or a friend to a small procedure where they left the same day. And so it's important to kind of remind people that that ASC provided care outside of a hospital. You're in and out much faster. The fees associated with it are much, much lower. And we can get you on the schedule usually much faster. So it really does become an access of care as well as a cost of care issue in Texas. And we really feel that it's part of the solution for being able to expand care to people.
And I think you've got a really interesting point of view on this because you're the owner of Avanti Anesthesia. So you are in a lot of ASCs, but you're not an employee of an ASC. Hopefully I'm not making the wrong assumption there, but
no, you're not. That's correct. In my instance, some ASCs might be part of a hospital system. And in that case, maybe there's a large anesthesia group that people are an employee of, but the great majority, especially in the Houston market, the anesthesia groups are independent. But what's really interesting about that relationship is that the anesthesia team and the ASC have a very similar goal. Our goal is to maximize the number of cases that we can take on each day by operating efficiently and still getting out in reasonable hours. You know, we don't take call. We don't work weekends and nights. There are some exceptions to that, of course, but it is a kind of more of a Monday through Friday, 7 to 3 or 5 kind of gig. Our billing structures are also really similar in that a lot of times we bill by the case and by the occupancy of the operating room. So we really have aligned goals and work really well together to try to drive efficiency and cost. It's very different than some of the other fields of medicine where a surgeon, for example, comes to the center, does their surgery, bills for their case, and then they leave. Their goals are somewhat aligned, but not exactly like anesthesia is, as they don't really get involved with what the other surgeons are doing or the overall efficiency of the day and how we staff our cases.
Yeah, and that you mentioned efficiency. Obviously, listeners of the journal and folks that are familiar with DocBuddy, efficiency and workflow, we're huge on those. That won't be news. That won't be news to anybody. So I think we've covered things that ASCs do really well previously here, that it's affordable access to care, it's effective care, you're in and out in the same day. But in this unique vantage point that you've got, Dr. Jeffries, that again, you're in a lot of ASCs but are not an employee of a particular ASC, what do you think the number one area of opportunity for an ambulatory surgery center would be?
I think the biggest opportunity right now is to really start getting the recognition they deserve. And what I mean by that is that while we're providing a large number of same-day surgeries with low-cost efficient care, we still are not really seeing the reimbursements that are appropriate. So if you have the same surgery done in a hospital versus an ASC, same surgeon, same anesthesiologist, let's say, but two different locations, the cost is drastically different. And that cost, while we want to maintain the cost-efficient care, we still need to cover our costs. And there's been a lot of drug shortages, supply shortages, costs are going up with inflation, the costs of our staff are going up. And so it's a very big concern for ASCs across our region as to how are we going to maintain this if we're not getting reimbursed a proper amount. And another example is we really, our volume of cornea care has gone down, just as an example. And the reason is an ASC with most private insurers can't get reimbursed just for the cost of the cornea itself. No profit whatsoever, just the straight cost. So we can't afford to do those cases. And those are now driven back to the hospital with lower efficiency and higher cost to the patient because, you know, of course, we all have co-payments, co-insurance deductibles. And so I think for ASCs, our biggest goal going forward is we need to even this playing field to some degree and allow patient access to care for as many different types of cases as we can do. You know, they've allowed legislatively for us to do cardiac cases, for example, like heart catheterizations and other procedures like that. But most of us can't afford to go in that arena if we can't get our costs covered appropriately.
Oh, my gosh. And hearing that, you know, you're on the front lines, you see it day in and day out. Before we started recording, we talked about the annual spend on U.S. healthcare being something like $4 trillion. So that it shakes out the reimbursement for something like a cornea procedure, doesn't even cover the cost. And then you're in turn driving those back to the hospital, the most expensive venue of care for the overall system, right? We're talking about it in totality. That's just antithetical to the way things should be going. So what can we do to fix it? What would you do if you could wave a magic wand?
I mean, I think if I could wave a magic wand, I would look back. I would do a lot of research first. You'd look back in time as to when the cost of healthcare was much lower and maybe insurers weren't quite as involved and what legislative burdens have been layered on us that are unnecessary and try to really drill down on cutting waste. We try to cut physicians' fees and all sorts of fees every year, but that's not really the root cause of the problem. My fees haven't gone up. In fact, they've gone down over the last decade, even though the cost of providing that care has gone up. And of course, we know we're going into an inflationary period going forward. So a lot of us are really worried about that. We agree that the cost of healthcare is out of control. We can certainly all agree to that. But finding the solution really requires taking a really big step back and looking even worldwide. What works? What doesn't work? What are the goals that we have? And try to really kind of find where we can make real cuts that aren't going to impact care to our patients and also the ability to provide that care. Because, you know, physicians, nurses, all sorts of healthcare workers, the numbers of people available are going down. So who's going to provide care for me when I'm going to need it when I'm older, for example, is a huge worry of mine. We need to be able to still recruit the best and the brightest into our healthcare field. So we really have to be careful about how we make these changes and how we make these cuts.
That's just it. This is one of the more complicated systems that, you know, humankind would know to exist, U.S. healthcare. Every change has a second, a third, a fourth and fifth order effect even, and I'm sure even further out to that. You just keyed in on something that's a running topic of conversation here at DocBuddy, and that is the physician shortage, the shortage of providers, like you said. So what can you do? What can you even do about it?
Yeah, and certainly the shortage is actually accelerating the burnout that was already there. So now that's like a multifactorial problem. I was talking to another physician at work the other day who's in a competing anesthesia group, but we have a good professional relationship. And they were asking, like, can you find people? You know, and I was laughing. I'm like, that's really hard to find people to work. I mean, there's just a huge shortage of, I mean, in my realm, anesthesia providers, whether it be physicians or nurse anesthetists. And we laughed. We're like, did we lose them all to COVID? And we're being sarcastic because I'm sure we did lose some, but that's not really what's driving it here. I think a lot of people were pushed to retire. A lot of people looked at alternative careers in medicine. I mean, we're physicians. We're capable of providing all sorts of different, you know, professional contributions. And so I think it is driving people out of healthcare. And some of that burnout is really when you're taking someone away from their primary goal, a physician to provide care to their patients, and layering on electronic health records that aren't efficient, working more hours outside of work, and all of these other types of administrative burdens are really leading to burnout. It's funny because when I was a resident working 24 hours on, 24 hours off, but all I did was provide anesthesia and study, I was never burned out. I was having the time of my life and I was doing great. And that includes residents who were much older than me at the time, who had children and family. And I look back at that time and I think, it's not really just the hours of working, it's what you're doing during those hours that is really what's leading to burnout. Because being a physician is really satisfying as a career. Making an impact in a person's life really does provide a satisfaction that keeps you going. But, you know, every time you see laws passed, like the Surprise Billing Act has been such a headache and is layered on so much stress to my day-to-day practice that it really does become stifling. And how we change that is something that I think people really need to sit down and talk about it seriously.
Yeah. And it's Dr. Jeffries, when you're right, you're right. Again, with the multiple order of effects that happen, you layer a law like that onto an existing structure, not thinking a couple of steps ahead. But I'm curious about your take on this. So you're an anesthesiologist, you interact with surgeons and other types of providers all the time. Do you see any difference, or do you hear any difference in burnout between fellow anesthesiologists or CRNAs versus the rest of the specialties?
I mean, I do, of course, I always preface things to say, like, that's looking through my goggles, of course. And if you're looking at it from another perspective, it could change. But for us in our field, we really can never escape. I will never say never, and I'll preface that in a minute. But we really, it's almost impossible for us to escape the insurance CMS bubble, because we provide anesthesia services mostly in a hospital, in an ASC, and patients have insurance. And we have to go through those systems. And those systems are so complex, getting more and more complex and getting more and more cumbersome and stressful every year. There are exceptions to that. There is a very prominent ASC in Oklahoma City, and now that I've heard one about in Dallas, that are completely cash pay models where they publish their rates online. They're extremely affordable. They've run things so efficiently and so lean that it's so affordable to go there, even outside of your insurance. But these are exceptions, and these are models that are emerging to kind of combat this stress on our system. Or we can do office-based anesthesia, where we do anesthesia in the surgeon's offices. I do that once a week personally. It's my favorite day of the week, to be honest with you. But because anesthesia really is the majority of our production is in an ASC hospital space, we can't really escape the burdens that we have when it comes to bureaucracy, whereas other specialties can. I mean, for years we've seen internal medicine, family practice, pediatrics have what we call concierge or direct patient care models. I'm seeing surgical practices in our area of Houston now starting to do that, dermatology, and I would expect that to continue to grow, because when they take out all the layers of administration that they used to have for billing insurance, you take that out and they can really deliver very affordable care. But my field can't really do that. So it's very hard for anesthesia providers to escape our burnout.
And I want to go back to something you said just a little bit ago, that your day is providing in-office anesthesia services are your favorite. Why is that?
Well, I call the patient typically the day before surgery, kind of answer any questions they have, get an idea of their health status. We also get that all online, but I just touch base with them. Then I have like a meaningful interaction with them the day of surgery. I personally get to do their IV. I'm personally administering their anesthesia, which I don't get to do very often anymore. And then I can call them the day after surgery and see how they're doing. And a lot of times they're coming back for multiple procedures and I get to see them multiple times. It's a really meaningful experience. And it's so funny because it's usually one of my longest days of the week and it goes by so fast. You know, like 2 o'clock, they're asking me, do you need to take a break for lunch? And I'm looking at my watch. I can't even believe it's 2 o'clock. It's just a great experience. You're chit-chatting with the surgeon during the operation. It's casual. It's just a different environment and it's very refreshing. I very much enjoy providing office-based anesthesia.
I would imagine, and this is going to borrow from like human performance and psychology stuff, I would imagine that puts you into a bit of a flow state, doing exactly what you want to be doing and just totally locked into the task at hand.
Absolutely. I mean, I went into anesthesiology because I love the operating room. I love, you know, how we're so immersed in pharmacology and physiology, and we know so many different things about so many different fields of medicine. It's a very mentally challenging field, so it keeps you really engaged. But I'm running out of space in my late 40s now to in my brain to add all of these other tasks that I have, you know, worrying about reimbursements and unpaid bills and, you know, payroll month to month. It's definitely a stress.
Oh, without a doubt. And you know, you're managing a team, obviously. What are you doing to help avoid burnout in your own staff so that they're not carrying, you know, this weight around? And, you know, ultimately that reflects on patient care and patient outcomes too, I would imagine.
Yeah, we've done a lot. We use technology to our advantage, firstly. So the first change we made about 2 years now, we started using an electronic scheduling program. And why that helped with staff burnout is they're able to put in requests for time off. They need early days out. And I can acknowledge that in the system immediately and make sure that I move things around for coverage so that people don't feel so stressed out about needing time off. Because that can be a really challenge in anesthesia. We need a person in every room every day to provide that anesthesia. So the electronic system helped a lot to use technology to your advantage. It also... they can do all of their timesheets from their phone. They no longer have to worry about, is it right? Is it wrong? Sending it to me, getting it in. So we do a lot electronically. It's also nice to let me know if they need to be out early because, you know, the traditional way would be coming in the day of surgery and be like, oh, I need to be out early. Me having to say, sorry, like you're going to be here late. You have to miss whatever personal thing that you really want to be at, whether it's for your children or for themselves. It was hard to make doctor's appointments. I mean, things that we really need to take care of. So that helped a lot. The other thing too is having empathy. I think we all have to have a really big dose of empathy in our lives to really maintain our sanity. So if someone calls me even today, right now, that they're having an issue, I'm going to drop what I'm doing and do everything I can to help them get done what they need to get done, whether it's they're not feeling well, or they just need a day off, or something came up at their kid's school they didn't know about. It doesn't really matter what it is, and we shouldn't care what it is. Whatever mental health issue they need to take care of, my team knows that I'm going to do everything in my power to take care of it. And I think that helps with burnout a lot. My team overall seems really happy. But it takes a village, and we all work really hard together to take care of it. You know, one of our physicians last week was having some health issues suddenly, and I had to send out like a text at 9 o'clock at night to everyone on our team. Can someone work tomorrow? And as soon as they knew why, I got like 5 texts of people who were supposed to be off, probably doing things for their lives, volunteering to work. And so I think even though burnout is a real problem, I think small changes, and we can enact small improvements to help everybody. And empathy is really the key to all of that.
Yeah, and I'm sure for those that are at big anesthesia, or maybe don't have that same empathetic relationship and structure in their workplace, I'm sure they are punching air hearing that you can get coverage just like that. You know, everybody's rowing in the same direction, working towards a common goal. That's powerful stuff.
Yeah, what I'm hearing from colleagues across the country who work for corporate anesthesia groups now is it's a thing to just like call out sick. And to me, I mean, as a professional, as a physician, like if you asked me if you could ever, you know, just not show up for work, that was never a thing. And so we really have to be careful as we make medical groups more corporate owned, that we're not losing the professional connection that all medical providers have always traditionally had, you know, a real true mission that, you know, we'd show up no matter what, because the patient care was so important. But we've started to detach people from that.
Yeah, I think you can see that across the full spectrum, physician, healthcare, or otherwise. Things like quiet quitting that you see in headlines in the news, just the world is changing, and maybe not quite for the better in some of these things.
I think we can use it as an opportunity to make things better. I mean, I guess I'm always the eternal optimist, that I do think there's always an opportunity. There's always a need for an entrepreneurial spirit in medicine. I believe that although technology has created some burdens and some pressure points for us, I do believe that technology can also be a key to the solution. It just isn't there yet. So, I mean, I still believe that there are ways that we can affect change.
I want to pick on that a little bit. And I know we've talked about your unique vantage point, that you're in a lot of ASCs, but not an employee of them. Maybe I'm in that same, you know, have that same type of unique lens. I'm obviously on the vendor side of things. I've spent most of my career in electronic health records, their sale, the management of these EHR organizations. And even your very best, most favorite client, the one that you can always count on for a reference as an EHR vendor, they may not always love you. You may not even be their favorite vendor, even though you do everything in your power to keep them happy, give them what they want, and just make sure that everything is running as best it can. So this is a really long setup. It's to borrow one of my favorite phrases from a Texan, it's a long walk for a short drink of water. I'm sure you've heard that one.
Sure.
These EHRs, the software that's regulated and essentially built to government spec, you know, this is the cause of an awful lot of burnout. Too many windows, too many clicks, all the things that you hear. But you, Dr. Jeffries, on the anesthesia side, there's no governmental requirement for you to be using a certified EHR. It's just you're a different breed of cat as an anesthesiologist. So you say this entrepreneurial spirit, you know, unfortunately, there's the burden of bureaucracy to make sure that all of the data collection happens how it needs to. But from what you see as an anesthesiologist, you're able to use technologies that serve and operate in, you know, I think a little bit more of a free market as opposed to the certified EHR. hey, we're going to do the best we can, but we got to capture all these data points. So do you see, what's your perspective on that, I guess?
Yeah, I do think the ASC space, because we were not included in the legislation to require, like you said, the certified EHRs, I really kind of expected that to then open up the opportunity to develop the right EHR, but that so far is not really what I've seen. I've seen kind of people buy old programs and then they update old programs that are based on, you know, computer technology we were using 20 years ago, not cloud-based, not, you know, HTML, not discrete data even sometimes. So I think that opportunity is still there. And in a way, we were given that opportunity by the government. We still do have a lot of charting requirements for the government, but it doesn't have to be electronic. I think if the government really kind of wanted to promote the EHR of the future that actually makes care safer and more efficient and really contains the information that we truly want, they do have to ease up on the burden of charting. All that being said is we use a electronic health record for my anesthesia group that we personally pay for, and we love it, but we've been able to create it from the ground up to work for our functions. And I love being able to log in from home. You know, if I get a patient issue from a surgeon, hey, Mr. So-and-so had a bad reaction to a medication. Do you know what he got? Sure, let me log in right now and tell you. I mean, it's just a great service to be able to provide that. I always call patients who have any other issues or questions about their anesthesia. Sometimes it's that they loved what I did. Can I give them a copy? And they don't have to go through contacting medical records, finding the paper chart, and all of the issues that go along with that. So I personally love using technology. It's just the problem is it shouldn't be something that carries a physician home at night. It shouldn't be that they're sitting there charting on the computer, not looking at the patient. It shouldn't be that they can only deal with one issue at a time. Patients have to come back each visit for one issue to be addressed. So the technology is supposed to be there to make our care better and easier and safer. But it really hasn't risen to that yet.
No, not yet. And, you know, we all hope that it will. That's, you know, that's a part of the mission here at DocBuddy. Obviously, the EHR vendors are doing the very best they can. But you mentioned something that blows my mind. You know, I'm obviously not a provider. I'm not a physician of any sort. I'm just a spectator. But I think the going statistic is that the average provider is spending 2 hours of their day after their clinic closes, you know, at whatever time that is, either a physical, literal clinic, or just when they're done with their patient load for the day, spending 2 hours a night, essentially completing charts. I hope that's a fate you've avoided.
Yeah. I mean, for anesthesia, we do, because when we close out the record, we close out the record, but my colleagues in other fields of medicine, that sounds about right. A lot of them will go in early. It's what they're doing during their lunch breaks. Whereas for me, when I have my anesthesia case open on my iPad, when I walk out of the room with the patient and deliver to them to the recovery room, I hit, you know, chart done and my chart's finished. And that's how it should work. You've been done engaging with the patient, you hit a button and that becomes part of the chart. But that's just not how it works for so many of my colleagues who charting really is their EHR, IT issues, after hours workload, bureaucratic tasks. Those are all wrapped up into one big issue that is probably the main driver of burnout. If we continue to have a physician shortage, this is going to become a real issue in 10 years because, you know, it takes about that long to trickle down. So I have real concerns about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's been screamed from the rooftops now for the last 4 or 5 years, just the outright shortage of anesthesiologists and CRNAs. You mentioned at the outset how tough it is to hire. You know, we hear that from our clinics, whether they're at the ASC or a physician practice, it's next to impossible to find good help, and even not necessarily provider type help, just any help at all for a practice. It's something's got to give. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but something has to change to get the system back on its feet.
Yeah, and it's a challenge to even when you do find people that you like, the rates that they're asking for, we can't afford. So it's kind of a double-edged problem because during COVID, there was so much government money funneled into the system, and rightly so and appreciated, but it drove these rates up for all these traveling and part-time medical providers. And the rates they want now is just unsustainable. So it's kind of, and then, you know, of course we had cuts to our reimbursements right after the COVID epidemic. So it's kind of that problem is still on the back burner as well.
Yeah, hopefully it's a global pandemic we can shake off before too long here. I know everybody's kind of tired of it, to say the least. So, Dr. Jeffries, with tasks right around the corner, March 6th through the 8th in Austin, Georgetown specifically, so just north of Austin, let's close out by saying where can folks find you at tasks if they want to drop you a line or get in touch with you or meet with you face-to-face there? How does that look?
Sure. I mean, during the talks, I'm usually either moderating certain sessions. I'm just out there meeting new members, participating in a panel discussion. I believe I'm giving a talk on physician peer review, I think on Monday. But typically the best place to find me is on our vendor floor, to be honest. I learn so much about what is out there and what can help my ASCs make their care efficient. And so I spend a lot of time talking to our vendors. And most importantly, our vendors help us have these meetings. It's our, you know, our vendor funding is super important to what we do. So I also like to give them an ear because you just never know where you'll make a connection. But I do tend to learn a lot on the vendor floor. It's probably the number one place to find me. But we have some great talks too that I'm really excited about. CMS is there on updates on Medicare payment policies. We get accreditation updates from the Joint Commission and AAA. There's going to be someone there from HHSC on an architectural review covering life safety. So that's kind of relevant to new ASC builds because the ASC industry is about to explode. There's a lot of construction in Houston on new centers that I'm really excited about. We'll get updates from the Texas Pharmacy Board. We even have kind of a legal talks from Morgan and Associates on some of the legal issues as it pertains to ASC. So there's some really great talks that I'm looking forward to attending.
Well, that sounds like good enough reason for me to travel. But if there's an ASC out there in Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, or just a little bit further away than a day trip to Austin, they're on the fence about going or not, what would you tell them? What would you tell them to get them to tasks?
You know, I would say you're not really ever going to find another opportunity that's like this. It's invaluable for networking and learning, not only from the vendors, like I said, but if you're from a center, you get to talk to people from other centers that may be having the same issues or struggles, and maybe they have found the solution to those, or sometimes in the discussion, the solution is discovered. I learn something every year from those conversations. There's people from vendors, ASC directors, administrators, nurses, physicians. It really kind of is a can't miss opportunity. And it's also still on a small scale. So it's very accessible. It's not intimidating. You start to recognize everybody's face from day to day. There's a lot of social activities built into this talk. Margaritaville last year was a social event in and of itself. With the pool and all the venues. But this year, they also have some really neat social aspects built in. And I mean, I think the cost is really accessible too. Membership in the society is only $1,500 a year. It is a worthwhile investment. You get to send three people to the conference each year for that fee, as well as access to all of the benefits we have on the website. But if you just need your AEUs or ICPs or CNEs, kind of like your continuing education credits, that's, you can go for just $350 a person. So, you know, I encourage people to do what I'm doing. I take the Von Lane bus. It's a Wi-Fi enabled, like first class seat on a bus. They drive me from Houston to Austin. I work the whole way there. I'll have a couple colleagues on the bus with me. So maybe it'll turn into less work and more fun. But that bus goes from Dallas, San Antonio, and Houston. So if you're even concerned about the drive being far, I always encourage people to take the bus and work the whole way there.
That, and I'll say this too, just to throw my two cents in, having been in health IT for a long time, have spent a lot of my days and weeks at shows like HIMSS or other health IT events that are maybe more practice-based or more acute care and hospital-based. The ASC crowd, and this is speaking from having been to a number of state associations and the National ASCA show over the last few years, the ASC crowd is for sure the most friendly and the most engaged and the most willing to just chat, just say, how's it going? Here's what we're doing. Oh, you're doing it this way. Here's what we would do in that case. It's a really engaged crowd is what I'm trying to say. It's
fun. Oh, I totally agree. You know, there was a an issue that came up at one of my ASCs maybe 2 weeks ago. And I said, you know what? I think that'd be a great topic at tasks. And they're like, well, but it's 2 weeks away. So I emailed our administrator and the person who would be giving the talk relevant to that. We kind of asked them, can you throw this in? And so that's like part of the meaningful relationship that you get with the society. Like, they're going to listen to you and they realize, you know, that's probably a problem a lot of centers have. We should address that. And not only are we addressing it, but we're doing it immediately. Like, that's just a quick turnaround. And that center was on the fence about attending. And I ran into the administrator yesterday in the parking lot. She's like, yeah, we're going to be there. So it was kind of like, wow. I mean, that's on the ground service right there. So much so that I'm, like you said earlier, I'm president of the Ophthalmic Anesthesia Society, which is like my pride and joy. And we've been struggling with our membership and our annual meetings. And I've actually enlisted the team that puts on the tasks meeting to put on our annual meeting next year. Because to your point, I think the meeting is really well done. And the way that it's such a congenial environment, I really want to carry that to another medical society with me. So I'm taking their expertise with me on the road.
Yeah. Tough to beat the tasks team. They are all over it. We always love attending and exhibiting and supporting the event. It really is a great crowd. One of the best.
Yeah. Their vendor floor was crazy at Margaritaville. And I've heard we've sold out our vendor space this year and we have to have overflow. I'm super excited to see kind of what that brings. Because last year I came home with a bag full of, like paperwork that really helped me provide better service and really great knowledge and made a lot of connections at the meeting that have been ongoing since that meeting a year ago. So it was a really meaningful experience for me last year, more so than past years. And I think to your point, it's because healthcare is shifting. And so these meetings where people can talk about their issues and come together and solve them and be the boots on the ground initiating change are becoming more and more important to carve out time. Kind of comes back to physicians again, and I'm constantly telling my colleagues, you really need to become involved. You really need to be part of the agent of change, because if you're not, it's going to change without you and it might not be for the better. And I know that you're burnt out and I know that you're tired and I know that, you know, reimbursements are down and stress is up, but you have to kind of stay engaged in what's going on around you. Even if it's on a small scale like this one, you know, you get to spend a day at the Capitol with your legislators. And so I think once you kind of see that and see how the process works, you realize that you really can make a small impact, and staying engaged is really important.
That's how everything gets done. Whether we're talking about healthcare or politics and advocating for ASCs, you have to show up, you have to be there in person, and tasks is absolutely one of the best ways to do it.
I agree. I'm really looking forward to it.
And with that, we'll say thank you for listening to this episode of the Doc Buddy Journal. If you'd like to learn more about Doc Buddy solutions and even get a free 15-day trial, please visit docbuddy.com. You'll be able to fill out a form, get in touch with us, and we'll set up your trial so that you can give our solutions a spin. Look forward to seeing everybody in Austin at the upcoming Tasks event, and then throughout the rest of the year at the various ASC State Association and national events as well. So once again, this is your host, Eric. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.